I am with Giles Job, who is visiting the Isle of Man and told me recently of his extraordinary childhood on the island, which is really interesting to do with the Derby Castle. Giles, let me begin by asking you, when was it you were there as a child and why?
Well, the family arrived in the Isle of Man on the day that war finished, 8th of May 1945, which was also my birthday, because my father came over with no Manx connections. My father came over basically as a service engineer for a company called British Thomson Houston, who had the equipment in all the cinemas in the Isle of Man, and much of the sound and sound equipment as well in other big venues. So we were quite intimately linked with the Palace and Derby Castle Company. Had a couple of years in Laxey, just sorting ourselves out, and then, for a reason I never quite understood, we got a flat, apartment, something or other, in Derby Castle, in the castle itself, from 1947 to 1952, as a rented apartment. It was an interesting place because the Derby Castle looked impressive from the outside, the old building itself, the Victorian building. But inside, above the ground floors, were all bars, endless bars. Anything from there up had actually been split just into two fairly conventional two-storey apartments, with the opportunity to get into the tower where my dad had a workshop. I spent my childhood from the ages would be 5 to 10 stroke 11 lurking in this strange establishment, which during the winter was as dead as hell, and basically Derby Castle shut down, the entertainment complex shut down, and the castle itself had just got the main bar open, where elderly local civic gentlemen came in very nice cars every evening to drink and play bridge. Never quite found out who they were, one didn't ask that sort of thing. But then in the summer, of course, the whole thing exploded with the massive dance hall, and most entertainingly, it was all entertaining, the variety theatre.
So I assume, as he was working for the Palace and Derby Castle Company, and they owned the Derby Castle, that was one reason why he ended up in that accommodation.
Presumably it was, yes. He was actually working for this company, BTH, but BTH's contracts were with the Palace and Derby Castle, so he was sort of quasi-employee. Well, he was a sort of quasi-employee.
I'm interested that it wasn't actually a hotel. It must have been at one point, but it was in apartments when you were there.
Oh, yes. And I never went there, or in my later sort of semi-investigations, I never found any evidence of it operating as a, quote, hotel. Mm. It seems from a very early days to be a hotel in as far as it was the administrative base, in a sense, for and in the best traditions, the administrative and drinking base for the dance hall and the theatres.
What was it like inside? What size were the rooms?
The size, actually, surprisingly conventional by 20th century conventional rooms, I suppose, in terms of we had a living room that I suppose was something like 15 to 20 foot square, but you never used the living room, really. You all lived in the kitchen dining room, which was about the same size, and then there was a hang-on kitchen at the back, a couple of bedrooms upstairs, and a tiny room in the attic. That was a bit less than half the hotel. The other half of the hotel was similarly had become, at least obviously well before the war, had become an apartment, a flat or whatever. Certainly when we were there, most of the time it was occupied by the registered landlady for the for the hotel. How many of the numerous bars within the complex she was the landlady for, I don't know.
Was it shabby inside? Was it still with its Victorian decor?
Looking back, you know, I never took photographs and anything like that, but looking back and trying to check memory, not shabby, just very simply and ordinary. Nothing ornate at all. Very, very simple, plain, boring sort of turn-of-century rooms.
But of course you were next to one of the finest dance halls on the island and the theatre.
Absolutely.
And you say 13 bars?
Well, as usual, I'm probably exaggerating. But certainly the number of, quote, bars, the number of places where you could buy a drink in the whole complex was up, certainly tens-ish, you know. Some said a bit. I didn't think in those days of actually counting, and no one could ever tell me afterwards. But every alcove seemed to have somebody serving, mainly beer. Beer flowed like water. It probably was the strength of water, I'm not quite sure, but there's a hell of a lot consumed.
And thousands of people coming through during the summer
season. During the summer, it was thousands coming through. The Derby Castle complex was, in a sense, towards the bottom of the heap, in poshness terms. You know, the palace was a glorious ballroom and nice theatre with names. The villa, which was not Palace and Derby Castle Company, did a pretty good, nice-ish rivalry. But Derby Castle, I wouldn't say was for the masses, but it was. It never had one of the big named orchestras. We had a very decent dance orchestra, but it was not one of the national names at all. I honestly can't remember who the dance leader was. And the theatre was the really fascinating one, because that was, you know, the palace would have its show for the summer. The Gaiety similar, but Derby Castle had got the classic, almost music hall, a weekly turnover. There's one family group I remember in particular. Details as everything ever are hazy, but broadly speaking, their turn, and God, this is how they spent their life, at least during the summer. Their turn basically consisted in the father lying on the stage with some sort of support for his legs, and on his feet he balanced a platform. And on this platform balanced his wife. And on his wife balanced and performed his at least one, and I seem to remember, two children. The mind boggles. I must have got this wrong, but it's so deeply seared that there was something of the sort going on. So I've been promising myself for the last 50 years that I'm actually going to do some proper historical research on this. If I do, I'll let you know the outcome.
And the orchestra playing, no doubt, at the same time.
Oh, the orchestra playing, no doubt, at the same time. God, the poor old orchestra. Because again, the orchestra, I say they were bottom of the list as far as names is concerned. So gloriously nameless, you know, jobbing musicians, and they played away and they banged the cymbals, and we didn't have a master of ceremonies, but we did have these lovely big boards on each side where the number of the turn would come up in red lights, which presumably my father had to service. I don't know, but I can actually remember a few names. Auntie Winnie, Winifred Atwell,
The Winifred Atwell.
She was Auntie Winnie. It must be a hell of a lonely job being a touring artiste. And so some of them turned to anyone who was local, who was internal, and could be very, very friendly indeed. And Winifred Atwell came several summers and got to know the landlady downstairs, who was good mates of ours anyway, And we'll always pop in at some stage during the week and meet us and became, you know, oh, Auntie Winnie's coming again this year, which was lovely.
And would she just do a week and then move on?
Yes, there were nearly, as far as I remember, there were nearly all weekly turnover. So these huge individuals, yeah, huge numbers of individuals and small groups rotating round Britain, and some of them lucky or unlucky enough to get the Isle of Man on their schedule.
I think I remember as a boy going in the theatre. How big was it?
It was smaller than the Gaiety. Probably similar capacity to the Gaiety. Similar capacity. Mm. Stalls and circle. I think that was stalls and circle. Mm. I think there was a platform up above where I could sneak in and look over the top as well.
The dance hall, no doubt you sneaked into there as well. Was that full of couples dancing?
It was full of people who became couples when they were dancing. I was young and innocent, so never really understood the dynamics of what was going on. But I think it was quite fascinating.
You also recall some subterranean rooms.
Oh, lordy, lordy, yeah. Beneath the whole complex. Now, presumably the castle was built first. So the original castle building had got a conventional set of cellars underneath, one of which we kept our coal, which had its exciting moments. But then the castle cellars, linked into the whole subterranean setup of the dance hall and the variety theatre, almost totally out of use, as far as I understand, by post-war, and scary, but accessible. I was a cavity custard, and so never really got around the whole lot, but my brother did. But there was lots of extraordinary structures under there. I was told reliably or unreliably by people. The theatre in particular, I think the theatre had gone through a variety of styles of performance over the decades. And there were some fairly classic stage things like, you know, trapdoors where things could emerge from and so on, and lurking underneath, capacity for ghosts to pop up and so on. But the one that I have faint memories of actually seeing was a tank under the stage area, because at one stage there were, whether it was a turn or whether they just had a period with performing seals, sea lions, something or other, tanks underneath with some sort of access to sea water. So the seawater in the tank would change, and I think hunting around the sea walls adjacent to the theatre, there were grids and so on and so on. So
where did you go to school at the time?
Well, in those days I was at St Thomas's, because we were in Douglas. I think possibly Onken might have been a little closer, but my mum and dad were quite involved with the church, so I think part of going to St Thomas's, which was a church school, might have come into choosing that one. But it did give me very interesting exposure as a young child to the promenade and all the goings on the promenade. And I think, as we mentioned when you were talking earlier, I would wait for the bus outside the Gaiety Theatre to go home for lunch, because we all went home for lunch, incredibly, and then came back again afterwards. I'd go home by bus, and waiting for the bus, there was the most fascinating gift shop, which had got a huge variety on display of postcards, largely racy, naughty postcards, which distorted totally my sex education, I think, for life. I think I'm seared by my understanding of life, by both from the Manx postcards and also from the goings on. Yes, in Derby Castle, particularly after dark and after the performance. But
this is quite an upbringing for a young lad.
Yeah, one of the perks for a kid are of the variety, the music hall side. There's a lot of turns that would come through. They would try to make some sort of money. And the one I remember in particular was the Boomerang Man, who would come on with a variety of clever boomerangs and whip them round the hall and catch them and take people's heads off and so on and so on. But then he would sell his own cardboard boomerangs, which were basically dead easy to make them. Two strips of cardboard with a rubber band or something across it, just a cardboard X. And if you fling it in a chopping manner, it does a whirl, and if you're really clever, it comes back to you and you can catch it. So people would, yes. So they'd spend their sixpence or whatever it was on their pack, come out, probably fairly well laden with Oakles ale or Castletown ale, and in the courtyard outside, in front of the castle, would have a go. And so they got all these boomerangs being flung at random, most of which would finish up on the veranda roofs. So I was exceedingly well stocked with boomerangs.
And your father, of course, would be around all the cinemas on the island. There was enough work to keep him going.
By heck there was, yes. And being a hideously conscientious man, he felt he had to be on duty every evening in case things went wrong. So it meant there was always someone by the phone waiting for some catastrophe in some cinema. But as a result, I was able to, as a kid, to get round all the Manx cinemas during the daytime. And the cinema, an empty cinema in the dark, in daytime, is a haunting place. And I'd get my own little private displays.
I was going to ask, did you see all the latest films?
Snatches of them.
Some of them would be a bit risque for someone so young.
My father was a very moral man. So I think he may carefully not have exposed me to some of the more risque films. But the smell of, you've got this combination of tobacco fustiness, and certainly up towards the projection room, the lighting system, the sort of arc system they used generated its own sort of ozone-related smells.
You've got a very vivid recall of this. It's absolutely fascinating. I've never heard any of these stories before. So it's been a great pleasure talking to you.
Great pleasure talking. Don't believe half of what I've said, but I do like a good story. And some of it is based on, it's based on memory. Mm. And memory is gloriously flexible. So anyway, smashing. Good.